A phone rings. On the other end, the vice president-elect of the United States. The ask? Lead the most powerful military on Earth. The catch? You're technically not eligible for the job. Jim Mattis, barely 3 years out of uniform, faced this moment in November 2016. As his plane climbed toward Bedminster for his meeting with Donald Trump, he watched a flight attendant demonstrate oxygen masks. Put your own mask on first, then help others. That airline safety instruction would become his guiding metaphor for American global leadership. A nation must be strong at home before it can help secure the world. Mattis didn't seek power. His yes came from the same place as his decision decades earlier to become a Marine, a near-death slide down an icy ridge at 20 years old that clarified everything. He wanted to spend his life among people who faced challenges head-on, who cared more about living fully than living long. This philosophy would carry him through 4 decades of service, from young lieutenant to 4-star general to Secretary of Defense. But what makes his story essential reading isn't the impressive resume. It's the leadership wisdom forged in the crucible of real consequence, where bad decisions cost lives and good ones save them. Growing up in Richland, Washington, young Mattis hitchhiked across the country at 13, devoured Hemingway instead of watching television, and occasionally landed in Montana jails after bar fights. One cellmate offered wisdom that stuck. You can look at stars or mud. You always control your response, even when circumstances aren't yours to control. Commissioning as a Marine officer in 1972, Mattis entered a post-Vietnam Corps where combat veterans shared knowledge alongside troublemakers testing boundaries. When a malcontent threatened to kill him during jungle training, Mattis confronted him directly, then handed him to First Sergeant Mata for discharge. The lesson? Maintain high standards relentlessly. His first leadership test came running a struggling recruiting station covering 5 regions. Rather than micromanaging 38 scattered recruiters, Mattis visited each one, established clear expectations, 4 quality recruits monthly who could graduate boot camp, and emphasized our mission, not my mission. He practiced command and feedback rather than command and control, unleashing initiative while providing support. When one recruiter refused required hours, Mattis ended his career. Partial commitment undermines both mission and elite status. By 1990, Lieutenant Colonel Mattis commanded the storied 1st Battalion, 7th Marines, once led by legends Chesty Puller and Ray Davis. When Iraq invaded Kuwait, fellow commander Nick Pratt sent his 125 best performers to fill Mattis's gaps, a lesson in never advantaging yourself at comrades' expense. In Saudi Arabia's desert, Mattis spent 5 months preparing troops who'd never seen combat. Through constant rehearsals and mental imaging, every Marine fought a dozen battles in his mind before firing his first real bullet. Washington knew. Men who are familiarized to danger meet it without shrinking. Mattis also deployed focused telescopes, trusted officers who circulated among dispersed elements, providing battlefield information without disrupting commanders mid-fight. The ground attack launched before dawn, February 24, 1991. Mattis's battalion breached the first Iraqi obstacle belt in 11 minutes, twice as fast as their best training time. By day 3, charging toward Kuwait International Airport through burning oil rigs, they were ambushed near a quarry. Their support troops, corpsmen, cooks, engineers, clerks trained as infantry, knocked out enemy vehicles in 12 minutes. Then came painful aftermath. Budget cuts forced the Marine Corps to shed 17,000 Marines. Mattis had to cut 9% regardless of merit, letting go veterans with 4 to 24 years of faithful service, the same sergeants who'd saved him in combat. At 43, Mattis attended the National War College, but his education began decades earlier when a sergeant major in Okinawa handed him a book with simple advice: do your homework first. Reading became his bridge across millennia of warfare, a conversation with history's greatest military minds. With 10,000 years of documented military history available, Mattis considered it professionally negligent not to learn from accumulated experience. He scorned commanders who claimed they were too busy to read, warning they would pay for ignorance with their troops' lives. His personal library grew to thousands of volumes, from Marcus Aurelius's philosophical reflections to Julius Caesar's tactical insights, from Grant's and Sherman's Civil War memoirs to E.B. Sledge's raw Pacific combat accounts. This intellectual foundation proved invaluable facing modern warfare's complexities, helping him avoid past mistakes and adapt proven lessons to new contexts. On September 11, 2001, Mattis immediately knew. They got through. By late November, Marines executed the deepest amphibious assault from the sea in history, a four-hour flight into landlocked Afghanistan planned in just 28 days. By mid-December, bin Laden retreated to Tora Bora with 2,000 al-Qaeda fighters. Mattis prepared special ops teams and Marine rifle platoons to block escape routes through 16,000-foot peaks into Pakistan. CENTCOM sent Afghan tribal fighters instead, who proved incapable of closing with al-Qaeda. By Christmas, bin Laden had escaped, the gravest error of the war. In 2003, Mattis led the 1st Marine Division into Iraq with his refrain, "Speed and chivalry," rapid advance combined with ethical treatment of civilians and prisoners. When the mission shifted to counterinsurgency in Anbar province by 2004, Mattis established pre-deployment training, rudimentary Arabic, counterinsurgency reading, Vietnam Marine veterans sharing techniques, and LA police teaching community policing. Fallujah proved particularly challenging. Political pressure halted an offensive and created a Fallujah brigade that handed control to insurgents. The day after withdrawal, al-Qaeda posted video of Zarqawi beheading American Nicholas Berg in Fallujah's market. Mattis told troops, "Be polite, be professional, but have a plan to kill everyone you meet." This seemingly contradictory guidance captured counterinsurgency's complex nature. By 2010, Mattis commanded 250,000 troops across 20 countries at U.S. Central Command. After 7 years, Iraq had achieved fragile stability. Al-Qaeda was retreating, sectarian violence had subsided. At dinner with Vice President Biden, Mattis warned that Prime Minister Maliki was devious and set on disenfranchising the Sunnis. Biden confidently replied, "Maliki wants us to stick around. I'll bet you my vice presidency." When President Obama announced complete withdrawal, claiming a sovereign, stable, and self-reliant Iraq, words never used by Pentagon, state, or intelligence reports, Mattis knew what would follow. Maliki imprisoned Sunnis, drove their representatives from government, and withheld funds from Sunni districts. By summer 2014, ISIS swept across western Iraq. All predicted, all preventable. As Secretary of Defense under Trump, Mattis drafted new defense strategy, gained bipartisan budget support, and accelerated ISIS's defeat. When his strategic advice, especially about keeping faith with allies, no longer resonated, he resigned, emphasizing that our strength as a nation is inextricably linked to the strength of our unique and comprehensive system of alliances. Throughout his career, Mattis never fought in a solely American formation. History shows nations with allies thrive, while those without wither. By drawing like-minded nations into trusted networks, we promote our values and protect our nation at lowest cost. What concerns Mattis most today isn't external adversaries, but America's internal divisiveness. We're dividing into hostile tribes, fueled by emotion and mutual disdain. Our democracy is an experiment that can be reversed. Tribalism need not disrupt it, but only if we choose vigorous debate over partisan warfare. Our motto, E Pluribus Unum, out of many, one, was adopted to avoid becoming a nation divided into tribes. Before deploying to Iraq, Mattis wrote, "Our country needs us. Our enemies are watching, betting their lives on America not having the courage to continue this fight." That sentiment applies not just abroad, but to preserving democracy at home. The question isn't whether we face challenges, it's whether we'll face them together or tear ourselves apart first.